Hello and welcome into Hockey Mountain High, your go-to Avalanche podcast presented by Superbook Sports. JJ Jerez here, Arif Dean, both of Mile High Sports, and it's guest week, right? We're going around the press box doing our summer tour, and this week we've got Evan Rowell of Colorado Hockey Now. Evan, I love having you on this podcast. I love having you on the radio show when you've joined me in the past, because I tell people all the time, you're the only person that has, I don't want to say a higher one, as high of a hockey IQ as me. So,
okay, welcome. Thank you. Welcome. There's another guy on this with us right now.
I'll just go fuck off.
His hockey IQ is low.
You guys do the podcast. Don't worry about
me. Now, Arif's got his strengths, but no. Thanks for joining us on the podcast here. I wanted to start with this conversation with your move to Colorado Hockey Now, because it was kind of mid season. I'm not sure, I'm of course in behind the scenes. I'm friends with everybody. I know how it all went down, but I feel like to the listeners, to the fans out there, they're all of a sudden just getting Evan Rowell in control of Colorado Hockey Now entirely. And nobody really knows, I guess, how it was all spun. So I guess quickly break it down for us and of course, tell us how you're liking it.
I mean, I think a lot of people probably still don't know. Like, it can be jarring, especially when it happens in January. Like, nobody, in that mid-season lull, a lot of people just like fade away and don't come back at the end of the season. So, yeah, it just kind of came together pretty quick, worked out, and it's been fun. It's been fun to be doing it full time and covering the team and back in the press box, because you guys know I was doing it before, so it's been nice. And yeah, it's interesting, and now comes the fun part where you got to figure out what to talk about in the summer when it's dead. But no, it's been a good time.
I gotta say, back in like middle of May, I think I messaged you, and I was impressed with the coverage you were pulling out of the ground between, the Avs' elimination and the end of the Stanley Cup final. You were pulling out some pretty good stuff back then.
Yeah.
That were kind of, it was relevant stuff to the Avalanche. I know you talked about Jonathan Drouin at one point, even Jesse Puljujärvi, some of the guys they could bring in. A lot of fun Patrick Waugh conversations, but it's going to get a little tougher here, but it was impressive in May, I will say.
I know. I'm hoping I can pull some more stuff out here. I mean, that's why the Ross Colton thing, I was like, if you guys want to drag this out for a little while, that's fine with me. But yeah, the off season, season ended a little earlier than I thought it was going to. So we kind of had to pull some things together, but yeah, this will be fun. I'm going to do a lot of film rooms, I think, on the new guys over the next little while, but yeah, they've made a lot of moves. They've made it interesting, at least.
I will say it's kind of crazy that last year we were, I think, 13 days out at this point from the end of the Stanley Cup final, and it's already been more than 2 months. Like, it's crazy what a long playoff run does for a team, and it's crazy how much it changes when you go on a Stanley Cup run, and then the following real year you're out in the first round. It's so much better for the players. I know it's a little bit tougher for us, but like, it's a world of difference.
Yeah, I mean, the players probably won't admit it, but like, you were in the locker room after game seven. Like, you could tell McKinnon kind of like it seemed like there was like a weight off their shoulders. We're like, okay, we can kind of, regroup here. We got a summer to kind of get healthy and get as healthy as we can. So it'll be interesting, because, last summer everyone was beat up. They didn't tell us. They told us everyone's going to be ready for camp, and they weren't. Hopefully everyone's ready for camp and good to go this year, because they've got that extra 2 months to heal.
Yeah, I mean, let's get into that access a little bit, because that was something that was taken away from us for a while. But, and you kind of took a break from being in the press box itself. What, coming back into the press box, and especially in a post-COVID world, what were you looking forward to? What changed? And just the dynamic of the coverage with the Avalanche from when you knew it before?
I was happy to get back, and Zoom was gone, because, I had been doing Zoom for 2 years, and now you still get it occasionally, but to be in the locker room is nice, because you can have those chill conversations, especially after like a morning skate. Like, those guys are a little bit more relaxed. They'll talk to you a little bit more. So it's been nice to get in there and not have everyone talking to the exact same person, which unfortunately can be that way after a game, because there's only a few guys that are still hanging around. But like, during the day or during practices, you can talk to kind of whoever you want. So it's been nice. It's kind of had to be an adjustment, because, we were in Zoom world for so long, but it's been a nice change to get that access back again.
I guess, was there anybody you were looking forward to talking to one-on-one since you didn't have that coverage for a while? I know Nikita Zadorov was now off the team, so you had to find a new guy to love.
I know, he's not there anymore. But no, I mean, I'm trying to think, anyone on the team? Not particularly. I mean, it's a lot of the same guys. I mean, I like talking to Georgiev. I'm pandering to the goalie here, but he does he gives you good answers. Like he thinks about things. He doesn't just give you kind of the standard answer. So he's been interesting because the goalies are always just kind of their own thing. And he's been interesting to talk to.
We were absolutely robbed the last 3 years and potentially for another year, maybe forever, who the hell knows, of having Gabe Landeskog in that locker room. It's an absolute shame that we haven't talked to Gabe Landeskog post game in a locker room since March 2020, and it might not happen ever again, or it might not happen till October 2024 or something. Like, it's wild how much has changed since pre-COVID.
I know, it's tough. And his two press conferences that he did, the one at Ball Arena and then the one by Zoom, it was like, you really are like, man, this guy is a great interview, because he's honest, he gives you detailed answers. And now we're gonna miss EJ too, because EJ is kind of the same way. He doesn't obviously talk as much as the captain would, but it's going to be different next year. They lost a lot of leadership, I would say.
Yeah, there's a level of honesty that EJ brought to the table that is definitely going to be missed. Sorry, Arif.
No, I was just going to say, I wanted to kind of get into some of the new guys. I know this is something we want to talk to you about, and JJ appreciates, and I say that sarcastically when I do the transitions for him. But a lot of these new guys, you know, we want to talk about the new guys with you, but a lot of these new guys seem like they're going to be great dudes to talk to in the locker room. I mean, Ryan Johansson ended his presser on Zoom. It's the smallest thing, but literally ended his presser on Zoom by saying, like, I'm looking forward to meeting all of you guys and can't wait to talk to you guys in person, like to the media. And Miles Wood looked like he's a character as well. We'll see about Jonathan Drouin. We'll see about Ross Colton. Can't really get a gauge for those guys just yet. I don't think Colton's spoken yet, has he?
Only Bennett's talked to him, but I imagine
it was after exclusive.
After he signs, I would imagine.
Yeah, he hasn't posted anything on social media either. I'm assuming this is, you know, obviously part of the arbitration thing where it's like, let's just hold off until this is all done. But what do you think of Miles Wood and Ryan Johansson in terms of talking to those guys in the locker room? And then I'll let JJ take it for those additions to the team.
So our Nashville guys messaged me immediately afterwards and like, Johansson is just awesome. Like, he's going to be an awesome addition for you guys to talk to in the locker room. So I'm really looking forward to that. He seems like a chill dude. It's always nice to get fresh blood in there who haven't been around the team and like the PR and everything like that. So he seems like the type of guy who's going to joke with us. He'll be willing to talk to us. Miles Wood, I mean, he seemed like just a total dude when we were talking to him the other day.
Yeah.
He's just chilling on his couch, talking about
being outdoorsy. He was like leaning back and stuff, double chinning it. Like,
so that'll be interesting. I mean, there are going to be a lot of new faces, and that's always exciting. I'm wondering about Drouin, because when you go from, like, we have Lehkonen here, and Lehkonen is very, like, he doesn't give you much. Like, you guys know that. Like, even, like, your recording, you're like, I don't know if I can hear what he's actually saying.
the guy undoing his tape next to him is always louder than he is.
Yeah. So you're like, I wonder if Drouin's going to kind of be guarded in that way, coming from Montreal, where there's just so much media. But he was good in his intro press conference, so I'm hopeful there. And, yeah, it'll be interesting. It's just the new guys are always the ones you flock to in training camp.
Yeah, Drouin strikes me as one that's going to be a little bit protected in the beginning. Would not surprise me at all if he takes over Matt Nieto's stall, I think, right next to Nathan MacKinnon. Just kind of protect him a little bit, keep him under wraps until he's comfortable, because that's a player where confidence means the world to him. He's got the skill. He's got the talent. He's still young. He's still got his legs. It's the confidence, and it's between the ears that's going to get him kind of going.
Who's protected more, Jonathan Drouin or Val Nichushkin? They're going to have to hire a whole team of bodyguards in that locker
room. They're just going to sit there and speak French and Russian to each other, not know what the fuck the other one's saying, and just kind of have a ball. Nathan MacKinnon's beside them. That's what a group we have there. But you know what? For every guy that's shy and reserved, for every Lehkonen, for every Nichushkin, for every what we're expecting Drouin to be, you have a Brad Hunt. You have a Mikko Rantanen, a Kale McCarr, a Logan O'Connor, God, I'm going to miss Evan Rodriguez. He was great. Alexander Georgiev. So tons of great dudes to talk in there. Jack Johnson, I mean, we only saw him for a month and a half, but now we're going to have him for another whole season of locker room access. So he's always fun to chat with as well.
I would say, I mean, we lost Newhook too. Newhook was one of the nicest guys in the locker room, I felt. Yeah. Like. You could just talk to him about anything. So, and if I was the Avs, I wouldn't put Drew in next to McKinnon in the locker room. I would be like, you got to mingle elsewhere. Like,
yeah, don't go just make some friends.
Don't just be linked at the hip with him. So, I mean, but I'm not in charge of that, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've brought up the new faces, right? I guess let's talk a little bit about the front office and their ability to not get emotionally attached to the guys that they won the cup with and are willing to almost start with a clean slate, right? I mean, that's a lot of new guys coming into this dressing room and a lot of expectations on those guys.
Yeah, I just want to add to that before you go into that, Evan. I subscribe to the theory that the reason why the LA Kings kind of fell off after their two cups in 3 years and their three straight runs of Western Conference Final or better was Dean Lombardi fell in love with his guys. Everybody got a long-term deal. He didn't want to get rid of anybody. And it kind of led to the demise of that team. Dustin Brown's contract just expired like 12 months ago. So for the Avalanche to be able to turn away, not only from, you know, guys like Nazem Kadri and JT Compher that they couldn't re-sign, but even to say like, you know, thanks and good luck to someone like Alex Newhook, shows a lot and says a lot about this front office. But yeah, let's get into that.
Yeah, there's been a lot of turnover in just 12 months. Like, it's kind of crazy to think about that cup team and what the team is going to look like next year, because it is not even close to the same team. And even like EJ coming out and saying, yeah, they tried to trade me twice 2 years ago. Like, they don't get attached. And I mean, that's kind of how you, like, you look at Vegas, they're cold blooded. Like, they're what, 5 days after they won the cup, they traded Riley Smith. Like, that's pretty crazy. Like, you, sometimes you got to just put the business ahead of everything. And it is, I thought that the Newhook, I had a feeling Newhook was going to get dealt. And I think he probably was interested in a fresh start for him, because you could kind of tell, like, they're not really trying him too much in the top six. He's not really a fit for the third line. He would probably say, like, hey, I wouldn't mind a change of scenery, a fresh start here. So, but I thought that the way that they did that was just, I thought it was brilliant. I thought that was, I think Chris Farland really put a stamp, his stamp on the roster this summer. Whereas like at the deadline, he was, you know, he didn't really do much. He just kind of skirted around the edges. So I think it's been pretty impressive. Some of the moves are, you know, we're going to have to wait and see, but he got creative, and I appreciate that, because that's kind of what he needed to do.
Yeah. There, we did a podcast right after the Gabe Landeskog news came out. Actually, no, I did it with Nate Lundy, because JJ was out of action that week. I remember you were on father duty that day. So I did a podcast with Nate Lundy, and kind of the big point I took away from that, and obviously we still don't know what's going to happen with Gabe Landeskog. He may or may not play hockey again, you know, fingers crossed it's October 2024. But if there was a time for Gabe Landeskog's injury to happen, it was this year, not next year, not in 2 years. It was this year, because it gave the Avalanche the ability to lock in some contracts using his $7 million of LTIR space, so that if he does return in 12 months, at that point, the cap has risen $4 or $5 million, and it makes up for those guys that you've committed to. So I kind of believe that. I think, you know, we'll see what Ross Colton gets. I wouldn't be surprised, as long as this doesn't become like a grueling contract negotiation that ends with the Avalanche saying, screw it, we're just going to give him 2 years. I can see Ross Colton signing for five years. I can see him signing for maybe 4 years and locking into a $3-3.5 million contract. And then you got Miles Wood locked in for 2.5. You combine the two, you add in Jonathan Drouin, that's Gabe Landeskog's money. And you wouldn't have been able to do that had Gabe Landeskog been healthy. Obviously, you would rather have Landeskog. But in order to bring in guys like Wood, Colton, you would have had to shuffle the deck on defense, maybe trade Sam Girard for somebody who makes less money. You know, I know you were talking about Andrew Peak out of Columbus for, you know, back in May when you were coming up with a lot of content. So I subscribe to the theory that Gabe Landeskog's injury and being able to use his LTIR came at the most opportune time, you know, assuming he is healthy and can come back next season, because the Avs can not only sign somebody for 1 year and use that $7 million and then give it back to Landeskog, they can actually lock in long-term deals knowing the cap is going to go up next year to make up the difference.
Yeah, it is a good point. It did come at the right time, and they've really done everything they can to like you can't replace Landy off the ice, but they're trying to do what they can on the ice to create a bunch of guys that maybe can do a little bit of what Landy can do here and there. And that's bigger guys that are going to play with a little bit more physicality and a lot of shot generation, because the bottom six did not really generate anything, especially in the last half of the year. And a lot of that's because those guys were probably playing more than they should have, especially like an Andrew Cogliano. Like, who could have anticipated he would have been on the third line all year long? But, yeah, you know, they had some guys playing above their head, and I think they really went out and they in the playoffs, they just realized that, hey, it's not good enough. We need to kind of make some change the makeup of our team. And that's what they've done. They've gotten bigger because the top six was already pretty big. You got Nichushkin and Rantanen in there, and now you had Johansson. It's a pretty big top six. It's just that bottom six was small, and now it's got a little bit bigger and a little bit nastier with Wood and Colton.
This is why I kind of wanted Evan Rodriguez back for one more year with the Avalanche, or, you know, even if it was a longer than 1 year contract, because like Cogliano just played his first full season with the Avalanche. I feel like we've been talking about him forever, but he's only been here for a season and a little bit, and he had to play a role above where he should have been. He's pretty comfortably slotting into the fourth line all year. Depending on what happens with another depth forward, Logan O'Connor should slot into that fourth line as well. But Evan Rodriguez slotted into the third line with Miles Wood, with Ross Colton, and obviously can be used as insurance for the top six. And you know, let's call it Ryan Johansson insurance, depending on how he does. Like, I would have loved to see that, but, you know, that contract he got with Florida, I don't know if the Avalanche could have done that.
I like how you said that there, that let's see how he does, because I feel like a lot of us just have the expectation that these guys are just going to hop right in and immediately gel with the rest of the team. And mainly because a lot of the guys' roles are things that you can just plop right into any team. They just do their thing and it works. Ryan Johansson, I think, is the one question mark, right? Sure, he's good at passing the puck, but can he turn it on in terms of goal scoring? Is he going to really have the chemistry you need with the guys he's passing it to the puck to? So as far as expectations, would you agree, Evan, that Ryan Johansson might have the highest, but also kind of the biggest question mark on it?
Yeah, I mean, a question mark probably goes between him and Drouin, but he definitely has the highest because he's got to fill that 2C role that everyone knows they've been missing without Kadri. But it really is, a lot of those guys are filling roles that they weren't asked to fill on their team last year, because Johansson, I think, was a third line center in Nashville. And you look at Miles Wood, he was a fourth liner in New Jersey, and the Avs are probably expecting him to be a third liner here. So there is a little bit of question mark if these guys can step up and kind of take on a little bit bigger role. Ross Colton, I feel pretty comfortable that he's going to, the only question I have really is that he hasn't played a ton of center, but he seems like he should be able to adjust to that pretty quickly. But a lot of these guys, they're going to be asked to play bigger roles. And I think McFarland's been really smart with how he's gone about it, but there's obviously a lot of risk. And Johansson is the big one, because beyond, you know, whether or not he's declining is one thing, but can he keep up with the way the Avs play? Because he's never been a big skater, and now he's coming off a major sliced leg, so which is not something you can easily come back from.
Let's start with Ryan Johansson. I want to go through all four of these guys. I have two questions for you of Johansson. Who is he playing with opening night? Who's on that second line with him? And then number two, give me a range, 30 to 40, 40 to 50, 50 to 60, et cetera, et cetera. How many points does he end the season with?
If I was the Avs, I would spread out the size a little bit in that top six, and I'd put Lehkonen with him and Rantanen, and give Nichushkin to MacKinnon so they can kind of spread out the size a little bit. But as far as my expectations, I think you have to expect him, if we're being honest, like, he has to do what Comfort did last year. He's got to be in the 50-point range at least, because if they fall back, like, obviously Comfort fell off big time in the second half of the year, and we all could have seen that coming, especially in the playoffs. But those were big points, and the team really needed it. So I think you have to get that 50 to 60 points from Johansson to feel comfortable, because he's getting older, and, you know, he's going to be signed for another year. So I think that's the expectation, 50 to 60 points.
The big thing with that 50 to 60 point range for me is, like, that's a very attainable number. That's mm-hmm. not something that I think is hard for him to do, but health is going to play a factor into it too. If he ends up with 45 points in 55 games, that's a great pace, but that means the Avalanche don't have Johansson for 27, 28 games. And that is the biggest question mark for me. In terms of line combinations, I actually think the opposite. I think you should just stack up second line. Yeah, go big. Jonathan Drouin has played with two guys on this team. He's familiar with two guys, Nathan MacKinnon and Arturi Lehkonen. Start him there. Let him be comfortable with those two. And then on the second line, take Johansson, put Rantanen and Nichushkin with him, just the behemoth line. And then on the third line, once you're done with the behemoth line and you roll in the next line, well, here's Ross Colton and Miles Wood to skate around like madmen, like Sam Bennett in the playoffs to just kind of piss you off. And if Logan O'Connor's on that other wing, like, this is a Chris McFarland team, like you said, that he's put a stamp on this team. And I'm just really excited and interested to see how they do with that top six and how they kind of spread the wealth. But obviously the biggest thing for me is the health. You know, last year they said everybody was going to be healthy. Darren Helm and Gabe Landeskog ended up not being healthy. Darren Helm ended up playing 11 games. Gabe Landeskog played zero. And what happens coming into training camp is going to be a big factor there for the top six.
And Nichushkin, I mean, he probably wasn't healthy all year long. So, but yeah, I mean, it is an attainable goal for Johansson because the reality is he's probably taken that first power play spot because he's going to be the guy that takes the faceoffs and goes in that bumper spot. So 50 to 60 points should be attainable if he stays healthy. And if he stays healthy and he doesn't hit that, then you're probably pretty concerned.
What is your, let's go to the next guy, Ross Colton. What are your thoughts on who he plays with opening night? And what are your thoughts? And that could also be, you know, insert UFA name here to play on the right wing with him if you think it's somebody else. What do you think in terms of who he plays with? What do you think in terms of range of points?
I think it's going to be about the same that he's done, 30 to 40 points. That third line center that's, you know, he's going to generate a lot of shots, a lot of attempts. He's going to be a goal scorer more than anything. He's not as much of a playmaker, but he's got a great shot. But I think, obviously, Miles Wood's going to be on one side. Right now, we can pencil in, I would say, Logan O'Connor on the other. But I think they need to add another forward, but that's just a wildly different makeup from the third line they had last year, and I think that's pretty exciting because, you know, Vegas, you know, if you want to talk about it, they're a much bigger team than all these other teams, and I think the Avs are kind of realizing that, you know, you can get bigger without, you know, you don't have to sacrifice the speed because both those guys can still really skate.
What are your thoughts on Miles Wood? That's the interesting one for me. I've not watched a lot of him. JJ and I talked about him and just, you know, the general vibe we get about him is he's going to be kind of, to me, he's a Blake Como type of guy. He's going to run around. He's going to hit a lot of guys. He's going to play above his weight class and maybe give you 25 to 30 points, maybe 25 to 35. What do you think of Miles Wood?
Hopefully he gives you that because you signed him for 6 years, but I kind of said that he's like the forward Zadorov, where he's got every packet tool you could ever imagine in a forward. He's huge. He can skate. He just doesn't think the game, bro. And he does a lot of stupid things on the ice. Like, he takes a lot of penalties. So it's going to be interesting to see how that meshes with Bednar, because Bednar does not like stupid penalties. And Miles Wood, if he's going to play more, that increases the chances that he's going to take stupid penalties. So what I'm interested the most with Wood and Colton is that you've added two guys into your bottom six who don't kill penalties. So are they going to try both these guys on penalty kill and, you know, get a little bit more value out of that? Because if you look at the bottom six right now, it's Cogliano and O'Connor, I would say, are the penalty killers. Like, we don't know much about Olofsson. He might be there. He might not be. Ben Myers didn't kill any penalties last year, really. So that's just going to be interesting to me, that what they're going to do. They're committing hard to two bottom six guys that don't really have a history of penalty killing.
I feel like they've done a good job in recent years of turning guys into penalty killers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's something I think those two guys would play that role.
Cause I don't think Lehkonen killed a ton of penalties in Montreal, and they've used them a lot here. So that's why I wouldn't be surprised if they're going to try to do that.
Well, that being Nichushkin killed penalties in Dallas. I could be wrong.
That was so long ago at this point.
That being said, there's obviously still time to make another acquisition here and there. We remember Evan Rodriguez was signed way late in the offseason last year. So do you expect any moves? Is there anybody you have your eye on as a potential good move? Or how do you see the rest of the offseason panning out here?
I mean, it was such just a garbage free agent class to begin with. And now it's just like the garbage of the garbage left. I think if you're looking at anyone, it's maybe some younger guys that you would sign. Like, people always hit me up about Foot on defense because they do potentially need a right shot. I think they need to add another defenseman for sure. He hasn't been very good in the NHL, so that's really the only thing. But the Avs are pretty good at developing defensemen, so if they think they can kind of mold him into maybe just like a depth defenseman, then that's something that you try for. The guy that I really like up front, and he's not going to have a ton of offense, but all of his defensive metrics are awesome, is Jesper Boqvist from New Jersey. He's a young guy. They didn't qualify him, so he's only, I think, 25. But he's a guy I would keep an eye on. But there's just – I think they need to add somebody. There's just not a lot out there. And I don't see the point of, like, a Tarasenko. I don't think he's going to wait it out for the Avs to, like, give him, like, a cheap deal.
Well, I mean, the thing with this UFA class is kind of something I've been saying all along is – you know, it's a garbage UFA class. Like, let's call it what it is. But the Avalanche didn't come into this UFA period trying to find the next Johnny Gaudreau or Artemi Panarin. Like, They have those guys filled in. They just need the around the edges guys like Miles Wood and Jonathan Drouin and what honestly should have been a Johansson UFA buyout, but they got him for $4 million instead. Like, there were so many pieces that fit, but the one that I'll ask you again, I think I asked you this a couple of days ago at development camp. What is your thoughts of Denis Gurianov?
If you got Drouin and Gurianov in your top nine, then you're banking a lot on those guys kind of figuring it out. And neither one of them are very good defensively. And I just, two of those guys would, I don't know how that's going to mesh. Like, you can only insulate some guys so much, because if you look at Miles Wood and Colton's metrics, they're not very good defensively, or their defensive metrics aren't great. So you're kind of taking a risk there. So he's definitely a, he scored 20 goals at least once in the NHL. So he can score goals, but I just think that's a lot of risk for a team that wants to contend heading into the season.
Yeah. I think the general feel is they're going to sign somebody before we go to the defense, even though he's kind of a defenseman, kind of not. Do you think Curtis McDermott stays on this team?
Until he's gone, I'm not going to believe he's actually like not a part of this team.
He's 1 year away from UFA, but every time we look at the salary cap picture, there's $1 million almost locked up to Curtis McDermott. I just feel like that's a luxury that they can't have anymore, especially if, like you said earlier, they're bringing in guys like Miles Wood and Ross Colton without sacrificing the speed. But we'll see how it goes. But JJ, I'll let you do this transition.
Thanks, Arif. Yeah, I mean, let's get into the defensive group as it is right now, right? Obviously, taking somewhat of a hit in Eric Johnson, whether it's on or off the ice. How do you assess where they're at right now, right? You still have Josh Manson with perhaps a lingering injury. We'll see how he is coming into training camp. What do you like about it? What do you hate about it? And what would you do to improve upon it, if anything, if you haven't mentioned that already?
Well, I love the idea of the top five if they're ever healthy together. That's just really the only thing. It's like, this is a team that wants to be built around their defense being quick, being strong, and being able to move the puck. And they just, those five guys did not play together for 80% of the season. So it's just difficult to bank on that when it just didn't happen so much. And a lot of these guys just are injury prone. Like, Josh Manson has not been able to stay healthy since 2019. We haven't seen Bo Byram stay healthy for a full year either. And Makar gets dinged up every year. So on paper, it's, I would say the top five is the best top five in the NHL, if you ask me, but we just got to see them stay healthy. And I think Jack Johnson is a fine number six, but if I was the Avs, I would be trying to find another guy that, you know, can maybe push him into that seventh role.
I know Sam Girard can play both sides. He played on the right with Devon Taves last year and in 2021. So I kind of look at him as the third right D right now, with Jack Johnson as the third lefty. But the reality is, like, your two true right-handed right shot D are Kale Makar and Josh Manson. And those are two guys that a good season is them missing a combined 25 games. Mm-hmm. And as soon as one of them gets hurt, you need a right D to jump into the top four. And obviously it's going to be Sam Girard, because you're not going to put Jack Johnson up there. We'll see with Sam Molinsky. He's kind of the wild card in all this, but it just says to me that, like, you know, even Eric Johnson didn't really fit that role well this past season, because I don't think he was cut out for top 4 minutes, but they really do need another right shot D. They went from a team with riches of right shot defensemen a couple of years ago, even having someone like Connor Timmins in the system, to suddenly you got two guys and they both are, you know, kind of known for missing 10, 15 games a year.
Yeah, and that's why I was kind of pointing out Andrew Peak so much, because he's young, or he's not young, but he's youngish. I think he's 25, 26. He's locked up for 3 more years, and he's a right shot. And he can kind of be that second, third pairing defenseman that can kind of move around with Josh Manson. But
I still think they should go for him. They can fit him in the cap.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess it really just comes down to what Colton gets, because he might have seen like a contract, because he's 1 year from UFA. He might be seeing the contract that Comfort got and Andrew Cobb got and saying, hey, you know, maybe fork over a little bit more. So it really just comes down to that. But I really do think if they're a team that's built around defense, then they should be looking to add another, I guess, definite top six defenseman, and hopefully an improvement over Jack Johnson, just because we know what they went through last year. Like, Brad Hunt was great in depth role. He filled in when needed, but it says a lot that they have Curtis McDermott on this roster, but when it comes to playoff time and everyone's beat up, they're just like, no, it's not happening.
I would sacrifice bringing in a third line forward for another defenseman like Peak. I know they have like $6.5 million or whatever it is to play with. So like you said, it depends what Ross Colton gets, because if he eats up 3.25 and then Peak eats up 2.75, I believe is his deal, there's $6 million right there. But that's someone that sticks out to me. I, ever since you mentioned it, it's kind of stuck out to me. And I really do think this team needs another right-hand D, because you don't want to put that much pressure on someone like Sam Malinsky. And, you know, Makar and Manson are your two righties right now, and they're going to miss some games.
Yeah, and he's Columbus. We know everything happens with Columbus. They just got so many connections there.
I really didn't want to interrupt Evan in this conversation, so of course, we still have to get our ad read in, but I just love picking Evan's brain. So I hope you guys are enjoying the episode so far. But don't forget about our friends at Superbook Sports. We are changing the game. Help your bets stay hot this summer at Superbook Sports, the most trusted name in sports gambling, with a direct line to Las Vegas. And now, when you use the promo code MILEHIGH, you score up to $250 with their first bet bonus. Win or lose, Superbook will match your first bet up to $250 with promo code MILEHIGH. Download the Superbook Sports app, enter the promo code MILEHIGH, and you'll get $250 courtesy of Superbook Sports. Visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Back to Evan and his hockey brain. Yeah, I was kind of getting in my own head a little bit, because I'm thinking, so I'm going to take a hard right turn here.
Are we talking about goalies now?
No, we're not talking about goalies. I'm just curious, Evan, though, kind of the way hockey goes through your mind. Like, when you're watching a game, how would you describe the way you're watching it? Like, do you kind of zero in on the defenseman? Do you have almost more of a zoomed out view of it? How would you put it into your own words?
Well, that's kind of why I like the press box is pretty far away, but I like sitting up there, because you can kind of watch plays develop. And that's the stuff I like to see, is like, you know, somebody picking up somebody on the back check that maybe another player might have missed, or like just a little play here that like a guy like Lekkonen would make that somebody else might not. So I try to watch like the full play develop. I mean, the game just moves so fast at this point. I'm getting older and my eyes hurt. So, but yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I just like to watch the total play develop, and because everyone wants to blame one player on a goal, things like that, like if there's a turnover. But like if a defenseman's going up the boards, like it's because the system, a lot of times it's because the system says that a winger should be there. It's not just they're like panicking to throw it up the boards to get rid of it, something like that. Sometimes it is, but there usually should be some support, and that's what a team is built around. It's just not just one player can make a mistake and then put the blame on them. It's just a lot of things lead up to mistakes that, you know, maybe we're not seeing just watching on like the TV screen.
So do you try to maybe dive into the potential systems they're running, right? With that, you can draw the next line and say, okay, so that's where the winger's supposed to be. This is what they're trying to do here. Is that kind of the way it operates in your mind? Do you have a systematic process going on in your mind when you're watching it?
Not really. I do think it's interesting that the Avs, like, I don't think they are as concerned about that 2C spot as a lot of fans are, because I think they look at it as like, well, you know, we have a lot of guys that can fill in, especially defensively in that center. And the way that the Avs system works, like you would see Landeskog covering defense all the time down low for McKinnon. and Nichushkin covering down low all the time for whoever he's playing with. So I don't think they're as concerned about that spot as like a fan would be, because they feel like they have a lot of different guys that can kind of fill that role just naturally through them. So it's tough to say, but yeah, I try to break it down systemically, but I almost, you know, that's a lot of work, and I'm almost, it's just some systems are harder to figure out than others, but it is, I do have interest in that stuff.
Well, especially with how much the game has changed in the last, you know, even 5 years, it's hard to keep up with all the new strategies. I mean, you've even heard Jared Bednar say himself when he came into the league, he brought some systems that nobody was using. Suddenly, a couple years later, everybody's using them, right? So it's kind of tough to keep up with the evolution of the way coaches are, you know, trying to manipulate defenses and whatnot.
Yeah, like the center, McKinnon going up high, three high in the zone. Like, teams do that all the time now. Like, it's not just the Avs. Mm-hmm. And it's smart because teams are not, like, a lot of defensemen just are not prepared to go out to the point. They don't want to, so it mixes things up.
All right, we could bring Arif back in and take it back.
I'm a little distracted right now with news around the NHL, but sorry, what were you going to say?
That's exactly where I was headed, because Evan is an around the NHL type of guy. He doesn't just zone in on the Avalanche, kind of like I tend to do. I'll point the finger at myself here. So what else are you looking for around the NHL? There's still a few trades to go down. Of course, everybody's looking at Alex DeBrincat, Erik Karlsson, even Connor Hellebuck. So what are you keeping closest eye on right now?
Let's start real quick with Alex DeBrincat officially traded to Detroit for a first rounder, a fourth rounder, Dominic Kubalik, Donovan Sabrango, and signs a 4-year deal at $7.875 million AAV. So one of the big pieces are off the table right there and then. It's happening as we're recording this. But yeah, take it away.
Is that a first like next year or what is that?
So it's a first. It's a conditional first next year. The only information I have on what it is, because the Red Wings account tweeted it out as a conditional first. Frank Saravalli. They didn't say exactly what it is, but Frank Saravalli says 2024 conditional first, and in parentheses he says Detroit or Boston. So I'm guessing it's going to be the lower of the two. So if Boston makes the playoffs, it might be like a 16-17 pick rather than, you know, a top five, top seven pick.
Yeah. That's funny, because DeBrincat, I had high expectations for Ottawa. I think they were going to be a lot better than they were last year, and he just didn't
agreed
fit in super well there. So now he's going to another new team, and
I don't know if he's going to fit in right away in Detroit.
I don't think so. What Detroit is building is just so weird to me. It's just like the most middle of the road team I've ever seen. Like, just like a bunch of middle six guys. Like, DeBrincat can score a lot of goals, and I guess you got to put him with Larkin and see what happens there. But I do think it's fascinating that his agent, like, he's like, yeah, we're gonna go talk to other teams, and then they come back and like, oh, nobody wants to give us anywhere close to what we thought we were gonna get.
Well, this is the kind of deals that I think that young guys should sign around the NHL and do it more regularly, man. Like, a 25-year-old who has scored 40 goals in a season twice is a 30-goal guy and just had 27 and 82 games in a bad year. And I say that with quotes. 4-year contract at $7.875 million. He's going to be a UFA again at 29. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what you should be doing, because if this guy can go out in the next 4 years and score 150 goals, which is an average of like 37, 38, at the age of 29, in 4 years from now, with a salary cap that's probably going to be close to 95 to 100 mil by then, like, he's really going to cash out. But this is what we should see more of around the NHL. This is what I think Pierre-Luc Dubois should have done, just because he's of that same age group. Obviously, someone like Elias Lindholm, 29, 28-ish, whatever his age is, get the 8 years. Do it now, because in your 30s, no one's going to give you big money. But those 24, 25-year-olds, like, these are the types of deals they should be signing. And I love that DeBrincat did that. And I will say, like, it's not by choice. I think he wanted the 8 years. Like you said, him and his agent went out there, couldn't get it. But I promise, you know, DeBrincat, if you're listening, because I know you like to listen to this podcast, if you're listening, I promise you this is a better move for you.
Yeah, and I think Ottawa is probably going to sign Tarasenko now. So they're just turning around and getting assets for a guy that didn't want to be there. And I don't know what they'll give Tarasenko. I wouldn't give him a whole lot of term. I think he's kind of on the downside of his career, but it is interesting for them. Yeah, I I just don't know what Detroit's building.
Neither do I. And Dominik Kubalík just came off a 20-goal, 45-point season in Detroit in 81 games. Has scored 30 goals before, has scored 17 goals in a shortened 56-game season. So he's a guy that will give you 20 to 25 goals as well. He might himself replace the goal totals close to what DeBrincat gave Ottawa. And then obviously they might go out and get Tarasenko as well. But a fascinating trade. Who's the next one off the board? Who do you think? Who of the big names gets traded this summer?
I mean, just going back to JJ's question, like Calgary's got like Calgary and Winnipeg, and we heard all these guys like, oh, there's mass exodus from those teams. Like nobody wants to re-sign in Calgary, but they've traded one guy. Like, are they just going to hold these guys ransom until the deadline and make bank? And like, what if you get to the deadline and you're in the playoffs? Like, what are you doing?
It's wild to me how Craig Conroy started. I feel so bad for that dude. He's such a nice guy. Mm-hmm. But he started the offseason with, we're going to sign guys that want to be here. And if you don't want to be here, we're going to trade you so we don't lose you like Goudreau. And his entire core is like, bet, I don't want to be here. Trade me, trade me, trade me. And he's like, fuck, what do I do now? I can't trade anybody. Traded Tyler Toffoli, got hosed in that trade. And now he's like, oh, shit, I shouldn't have said anything. Like, it's such a wild situation going on there. And Huberto, Uyghur, and Kadri are just sitting there with their hands up like, what the fuck is going on here? Who's this Sharon Govich, and where is everybody? Who are we going to play with?
Yeah, and they always – all they did was – didn't they just promoted their assistant coach, was like, I feel like that rarely works out where you just promote the assistant coach because he's best buds with everyone on the team. Like now he's got to go to be like the hard ass. So,
well, hey, the good thing is he's not going to know anybody because they're going to all be gone by then.
But they – I mean, they had a real chance – it gets harder and harder to trade these guys the more in the offseason you get because nobody has cap space now. But they had a chance to, like, maybe rebuild a little bit. Like, if you would have traded Elias Lindholm, I think you could have gotten, like, a really good package.
Agreed.
I think he's a better player than Pierre-Luc Dubois. But, you know, they're holding on to him. They got Mikhail Backlund. They got Z. They got other guys that are unrestricted in 1 year. So it's just going to be fascinating. And then, you know, I don't know. Winnipeg is the same way. Like, they've got Hellebuck who's like, I'm not signing. Like, I don't. Yeah. What are you gonna do?
Elliot Friedman said a lot the past couple of weeks that the Avalanche checked in on Backlund. I don't know to what extent, but I'm really curious if that was post Johansson Backlund as like the instead of Ross Colton guy, or was he the instead of Johansson guy? That's the part that I'm curious about.
I think he would have made sense as the instead of Johansson guy. Because it would have been a shorter term type of thing. Because he's 34.
What has he got? Like 1 year left at 3 point something?
I think it's in the fives. I'd have to look at it again.
Interesting.
But I think he would have been like the Johansson type guy. And he would have been a good pickup. Like he's a two-way guy for sure. And it's not like Johansson where it's just like, oh man, does he still have it? Like, no, he's coming off a good year. So that obviously would have cost
5.3. Sorry, go ahead.
That obviously would have cost a lot more than the absolutely nothing they gave up for Johansson.
Yeah, it's just wild to me that this team managed to bring in a first round draft pick, Ryan Johansson, Ross Colton, Jonathan Drouin, and Miles Wood for Alex Newhook. Obviously, JT Conference, some other UFAs, you got to count those as well. Lars Eller, Matt Nieto, both getting multi-year deals for some reason. But it's a tidy piece of work, and I'm excited to see where they go from here. But where do you think Hellebuck lands, whether it's the offseason or the trade deadline?
I don't know, because nobody wants – because he wants what, the Vasilevsky deal, $9 million. Yeah. And New Jersey is the one team that's like, yeah, we want him, but, like, we're not going to give him that. Like, we have a structure that we've built around. Like, JJ, you're the goalie guy. Like, there's Hellebuck, and then there's John Gibson too. Like, what would you give for these guys?
And John Gibson's 6.4 for a few more years.
Yeah. I feel like John Gibson is the guy you can get on a deal just because he's played on some rough teams lately, right? But if you look back to when the Avalanche played the Ducks at home, John Gibson was the sole reason that he just shut the Avs down and the Ducks walked away with the win. So I'd probably take a flyer on John Gibson first just because I feel like you get him at a better price. But obviously two awesome, awesome goalies.
Four more years at 6.4 for Gibson. It is.
Gibson has always felt like the most overrated player in the league to me. But also, it's like that team sucks. Like, what do you expect him to do? So I don't know. Like, I feel like I'm sure LA is like, come on. Like, that's the guy we want. I think he wants to play in LA. I think that kind of came out, like LA or Pittsburgh were kind of two of the teams that he wants to play for. But like LA, I think they're a team built to win now. And then you look at their goaltending, you're like, well, I don't know what they're doing.
Evan, I'm curious.
That's the team real quick. LA, I think they get Hellebuck at the deadline, and I think it's a rental piece, and he doesn't end up re-signing there. Because they got Cam Talbot making a mil, they got Phoenix Copley making 1.5. Hellebuck's going to be their Corpus Allo this year.
It's quite the upgrade. I guess I was curious about all the Hockey Now guys and like the communication within the Hockey Now network. How open is that, and how much do you kind of lean on your coworkers that are spread across the league?
Well, that's kind of like how the Drouin thing came up, because like I messaged him 2 months ago and I was like, hey, you know, he's not re-signing. Like, I know he's not. And they're like, yeah, I'm pretty sure he's headed to Colorado. And I was like, okay. So I'll kind of like write this now. So I kind of had a feeling he was headed there, but like, you know, it's pretty open. Like a lot of the newer guys, especially, I'll reach out to them, you know, talk to them about like, you know, I talked to the Nashville guys about Johansson. Like, was he really that bad? And they're like, no, when he was healthy, he was pretty good. Like, he just didn't stay healthy last year. So yeah, it's pretty open communication. We can talk to them about anything. I get the down low on like what they're like in the locker room. So that'll be interesting. Like Miles Wood, you get the Devils fans who are like, oh, he had the hip surgery. He wasn't as fast as he was last year. And I talked to our Devils guy. He's like, no, he's still the fastest guy on the team. So it's just things like that where you kind of get the unbiased, you know, report on what's actually happened with these guys. So it'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to it.
How many teams are part of the Hockey Now network, or how many teams are not? If it's more than, is it at least half the league at this point? I feel like, yeah, I've seen a bunch.
We're up there now. I think
Boston, Pittsburgh, I think Montreal. It's
definitely Florida.
Yeah.
I think we're at like 20. We're about a third of the league. Oh, wow. Two-thirds of the league now. So
that's great.
Yeah, I know both the finals teams were Hockey Now networks, and we're all over the place now.
And it's pretty impressive. Was Colorado the first? Do you know?
Second. Pittsburgh started it all. Second or third. Pittsburgh and Boston might have been the first two.
Boston Murphy? Jimmy Murphy?
Jimmy Murphy, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, there's some big names floated around the Hockey Now network. Mean,
George Richards
is awesome in Florida. He's been doing it for a while. Shang in San Jose, he's great.
Oh, yeah, Shang Peng.
So, yeah, there's some great guys out there now. You know,
and like Evan Rowell.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I reached out to Shang and I was like, what's the deal with Merkley after the trade? He's like, he laughed. He's like, you don't want to know. And you watch him play and I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, he's got to be one of the more frustrating players I've ever watched.
Isn't it wild how pretty much everything that happened in the middle of the season last year is irrelevant? From Lars Eller to Merkley to Nieto to even the Evan Rodriguez signup. Like, everything that happened last year, the Avalanche this summer, it feels like they took the Stanley Cup team and they're transitioning and they're like, everything in the middle, we're just going to pretend didn't happen. It's wild.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it was such a short offseason. Maybe they're just like, we don't have enough to make like too big of changes here. So now they're like, this is our offseason here to make some big changes. So I almost wonder, like, people were mad that they didn't make any big moves at the deadline. It's just like, they didn't know if their captain, I wouldn't have made any big moves if I knew Landeskog. If there was a slight chance that Landeskog was not coming back, I would not have made a big move. Cause I don't think I don't think this team can win without Landeskog. I just think he does too much.
The Nathan MacKinnon presser that you're talking about in the locker room, the writing was on the wall. We kept saying the right things, but you know, we were hurt. We were whatever. I can't help but feel that Chris McFarland, Joe Sakic, everybody felt that too. And I will take it as far as saying, even giving up a second rounder in 2025 for Lars Eller, they're like, we don't really want to do this, but we're just going to do it because we need a body. And they did it. It didn't work. And the season ended. And like I said, it's July 9th. And we are more than 2 months into an offseason that last year we would have been 13 days post Game 6 Stanley Cup victory, 8 days or 9 days post parade in downtown Denver, and like 2 or 3 days post Curtis McDermott falling off his ass with the Stanley Cup. Like, everything has changed so quickly. The writing was on the wall for this offseason. And I think Chris McFarland, Joe Sakic, for everybody that sat there and looked at the deadline and said they didn't do it, they couldn't do it, I just think they didn't want to do it. They didn't want to mortgage too much of the future.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, people are going to be mad, but because, you know, it is the, I get why they're mad, because McKinnon, McCarr, those guys are in their prime. You should be trying to win with them. But like that season last year was just so cursed, outside of me joining the beat again. It was so cursed. Like every time, you know, we're like, oh, everyone's finally healthy for the playoffs. And then you watch Josh Manson skate in game one. You're like, oh God, he's not even close to being healthy. Like this is this. And McCarr was not even healthy in the playoffs. So it's just
Darren Helm played 14 seconds, not literally, but pretty much literally all season and in the playoffs. Jack Johnson, like the drama around Jack Johnson's going to play ahead of Eric Johnson and then takes the morning skate. A guy that played 83 regular season games, didn't miss a goddamn shift, takes the pregame, not even the morning skate, the pregame skate of game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and then is a late scratch. Like just what a freaking year that was. Andrew Cogliano breaks his neck. And then to top it all off with a nice big cherry, the Val Nichushkin. Like it was just what a year. What a year.
I'm still like this. The Cogliano hit. I still think it's just inexcusable that that was not a suspension. Like that is something you're taught when you're 6 years old, not to hit somebody like that. It's not. And then, you know, some people are like, oh, he wasn't turned at all. Like he was just facing the boards. It's just, I don't know. But that's months ago, and hopefully he's healthy. Obviously, he's feeling better. They gave him a contract.
Remind me again who hit him?
Eberle.
Eberle, that's right.
And maybe that's why it was. They're like, oh, well, he's not a dirty player. He's just
He Jordan just made Eberle. A stupid mistake, just like Cale Makar.
Yeah.
I'll never forget the sound, and we can probably wrap it up with this. I'll never forget the sound of Cale Makar smashing Jared McKinnon into the boards. Because, you know, you were there too. The Seattle press box has us kind of more toward that side of the ice. So it was like from our seat to that ice, to that spot was like 75 feet. And like the way the play stopped, the whistle blew and everybody calmed down. And then you just hear this massive boom. And you see Cale Makar skating away from a guy that's just like dead on the floor. Like I'll never forget that sound and that feeling the entire arena, the entire press box, all of us had, probably everybody watching on TV of, what the hell just happened?
Yeah. I don't know what, you know, I guess we won't have to get into, I don't know what Cale was thinking there, but.
He had a dream that he was getting booed. Don't forget
that. Yeah, that was, I got to give Seattle fans credit. That was funny.
Every time, it was so great.
Anytime the puck came near him, they got louder and that was great.
Yeah.
They were ready for that. That's what makes the playoffs fun. Like add some hate to it.
Yeah.
Well, that being said, do you anticipate a much deeper playoff run this year? Of course, I hope to have you on this podcast before then, but let's get a little bit of a prediction out there now that we're looking at training camp soon enough here.
A deeper playoff run? Huh? I mean, yeah, because they only made it the first round this year. I think they should make it further. They should be healthy this year, or at least to start the year. And hopefully, like all that bad mojo from last year, the short off season, you know, they have some time to rest and hopefully they're good to go for the summer. Cause, you know, as much as, you know, you can talk about the moves they've made, they've still got Nathan McKinnon, they've still got Mikko Rantanen, and they've still got Cale Makar. I think Devon Taves is going to sign a contract here soon.
Yeah.
That's my hunch.
I agree.
So I think they've still got the best players in the division. So I think they're going to go on a run again.
Speaking of the division, we can talk about LA, Vegas, Edmonton, but those are all in the Pacific. Is there anybody in the Central? Obviously Dallas, they added Matt Duchene, but is there anybody in the Central that genuinely in your mind can give the Avalanche trouble?
You have to look at Dallas. Like they went out and they added Matt Duchene. So, I guess we'll see what happens with him there because things always seem to turn sour wherever he goes, but... I think Dallas is the team. I don't know. Nashville was just weird this summer. They just like got rid of guys just to bring older guys in. So I don't really quite know what they're doing. But Dallas is the team. But I just think the Avs they have the top end talent. And I'll say this for JJ. I love Georgiev. I think he's awesome. Yeah. I think he got a taste of the playoffs. I don't think he was the best. I think he was pretty average. But I think he's got the goods to be really good. And he's still, obviously the thing is in the NHL, you gotta have cheap goaltending and he's still cheap for 2 years.
Evan, if there's one thing that this podcast is a supporter of Alexander Georgiev, we talked about him a lot last year. The entire early part of the season was the Avalanche are injured and hurting, but it's Georgiev, it's Nathan MacKinnon, and it's the power play until Edmonton took over. Those were the three things we talked about for the first like 7 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
Like maybe we go with Hockey Mountain High, your go-to Alexander Georgiev podcast.
Ayo.
He really blew me away last year, especially with the Frankie injury. Like, he had to take on so much and he just handled everything great.
Yeah, I agree with you. We love him here at Hockey Mountain High. But yeah, I guess our time is running out. So thanks for hanging out with us, Evan. You're going to have to hang out with us some more throughout the season. And yeah, thanks for keeping this train rolling on the summer press box tour.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited to see what you pull out of your ass for the next 7 weeks. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, me too. Well, I'm still figuring it out.
Yeah, absolutely. If you don't subscribe to Colorado Hockey Now, check it out. A lot of good stuff. And like I said at the top of the show, one of the only hockey minds I really trust covering this team. So
I'll pass you the puck tomorrow.
Also,
he says that, but he won't.
That's because I'm too tired to go get the puck.
It's because JJ should be a goalie. All of you should check out those film rooms. I always see you talk about how the film rooms don't
have. Looks at them.
That's wild. Like that's something JJ talk about all the time. I don't know the first thing about the X's and O's of hockey, and we have somebody in the press box that wants to talk about it. Y'all should be watching those film rooms.
Yeah, I thought especially the Kovalenko stuff because he's such an interesting piece nobody knows anything about, but. Yeah, I mean, the stuff in season, like I did a Rodriguez MacKinnon one that people liked and Tase Picard, but yeah, it's hit and miss, but I like doing them, so I keep doing them.
Cool. Well, I guess here's where we will cut it off. Don't forget about our friends over at Superbook Sports. Evan, thanks again for hanging out with us today. And of course, if you made it this far in the podcast, bless your pretty little heart. Let's make hockey forever. We out, Shane.